You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by Molly's Spirits. And now, The Porchcast.
Alrighty, everyone, and welcome to episode 89 of The Porchcast. Welcome back. My name's Tristan. I'm your host, joined by our co-hosts Corey David and Bryant VanderWeerd. Very excited to be on the road and up in Fort Collins tonight, as we are joined by Laird Moldering, VP of Operations for Sweetwater Brewing, who just recently opened up a location up here in Fort Collins. They've actually been very busy, and we're excited to get into it with them. We're going to learn all about their recent acquisitions, their move out to the west here in Colorado. But before we do, as always, we got to give special thanks to all of our sponsors of the show. A big thank you to Molly's Spirits. For all of our Denver listeners or anyone visiting Denver, explore a land of adult beverage discovery at Molly's Spirits, offering a curated selection of beers, wines, and spirits in Lakeside and Greenwood Village, Colorado. Shop over 14,000 products, including exclusive collabs and an extensive craft beer selection, in-store or online for curbside pickup or delivery. Learn more at mollyspirits.com. That's a great spot if you guys want to go pick up some Sweetwater. I'm sure you can find some there. Also, I know it's the new year, so a lot of people are working on a lot of new projects. Perhaps you're in kind of looking for a brewery expansion in the market. I don't know, but our friends
maybe possibly yeah.
Maybe you need some funding so that you can move out west and open up a second location.
Looks like this construction project you got here could use some funding.
Yeah.
Maybe call these guys up.
That's right. Our friends at OnTap Credit Union are a great resource. They're not your average bank or credit union. It's different. Part of what makes it so different is it's distinctly Colorado. Founded in 1954 in Golden, Colorado, OnTap Credit Union provides great financial advice in a friendly environment. With OnTap, members come first, which is why they offer loan low rates for cars, homes, credit cards, and more. With OnTap Credit Union's mobile app, you can have access to your account whether you're in a meeting with friends at a local brewery or out on the slopes. OnTap Credit Union has locations in Golden and Arvada, or visit them online at ontapcu.org. Member owned, Colorado proud, federally insured through NCUA.
And very feathery.
Feathery.
A lot of
that's
birds.
Right.
They have it's a lot in the office.
Well, no, I mean, they're great. I'm actually going through the home loan process because we're looking to purchase our first home here in Colorado, and we actually are going to be using OnTap Credit Union. So very excited to meet with Leslie's team to get a mortgage. So
full circle.
Yeah, get a loan for our mortgage.
They really hooked it up.
That's right. And then finally, I know several of you all are probably still practicing dry January for maybe another week or two, because let's be real, nobody actually finishes dry January.
Listen, you've had enough board game nights. It's time to do something else.
That's right. So to close out your dry January, I've got the perfect solution. Why not jump into it with a incredible craft beer festival?
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. It sounds like way
Mark your
fun.
Calendars, because the Winter Brew Fest at Mile High Station in Denver is taking place on Saturday, January 22nd. This year's Winter Brew Fest is the perfect way to kick off the new year. With daytime and evening sessions, you won't have to worry about missing out on any of the fun. There's even a VIP evening session that gives you access to the festival an hour early, as well as a special beer and cheese pairing that's only available to VIPs. General admission starts at $45 in advance, includes unlimited sampling and a souvenir glass. You'll also be able to enjoy live music and a variety of food trucks that will be on site. With over 30 breweries and 80 different kinds of beverages available to try, there are options to choose from no matter what your favorite flavor is. Go to winterbrewfest.com to purchase tickets for Winter Brew Fest on January 22nd and start the new year the right way.
Larry, are you going to be there? Winter Brew Fest?
Good question. We got to call Turk.
Say, well,
we got to call
Turk.
Texting
somebody
right now.
That's
the sales side, not the production side.
Like, wait a minute.
I don't know if I'm expected Winter Brew Fest sounds like a not. Pretty good beer festival that Sweetwater should visit.
Yeah, bust out the pretzel necklace and go have a ball.
Well, for
yep.
those
yep.
for those who aren't familiar with Sweetwater, I don't know why you wouldn't be, because they're one of the largest craft breweries in the country. Started in Georgia and now out here in Colorado, up here in Fort Collins. Laird, thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah,
really
no doubt.
It.
Thanks for coming out. Man.
Yeah.
Cheers, by the way.
Hey. So we're cracking open beers.
420 cheers.
420. Yes. It's not quite 420 right now, but it's 420 whenever you're drinking.
Yeah, 420 somewhere.
We're late.
That's, it's always 420 somewhere.
That's right. Whenever you're drinking Sweetwater, it's a little 420.
That's more of a Willie Nelson saying than
yep,
Jimmy Buffett.
Yep.
It's about the same.
That's right. For those who aren't super familiar with Sweetwater, they recently opened up a Fort Collins location in the former Red Truck Brewing location. We are very excited to have you guys out here. I've been a longtime fan, especially since I'm originally from Kentucky. I know we had access to Sweetwater much earlier than out here in Colorado. It's been a busy couple months because I know you all announced just last year that you were going to open distribution out here. And pretty soon thereafter, the announcement came that you were going to open up an actual brewery out here. So tell me a little bit about kind of how this whole process came about. And where the plans to expand out west came from?
Yeah, for the Sweetwater side, Sweetwater's aggressively always been growing, but kept themselves in a well-maintained footprint. So over on the East Coast, stretching out here to the Midwest, there was a little spot where Freddie, who owns Sweetwater.
Freddie Bench, right?
Yep. Yep, lives up in Telluride. So there was always a little pocket in Colorado.
It's usually what it takes. It's like, hey, I'd like to see my beer at the place that I like to vacation.
Yep.
That's right.
And so Sweetwater had a little, distribution footprint just up in Telluride, so he could drink the beer up there.
Yeah, little known fact, Sweetwater wasn't available up until 2021 here in Colorado. But if you actually went down to Telluride, how long had they been out in Telluride?
Good question. Good. I know he's lived in Telluride for quite a few years.
Yeah.
I don't know how far back the beer stretches there.
Well, so I believe, as the story goes, Freddie became really good friends with Fish down at Telluride Brewing.
Yep.
And so they partnered with Telluride to distribute just to the city of Telluride for many, many years.
And just, have it in your own backyard as you go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I know Freddie graduated from CU too, so that the Colorado connection stretches even deeper.
Kind of the bringing it back full circle.
Totally.
Yeah, that's when you own the brewery, you can pull those kinds of levers.
That's right.
They're like, wait a minute, I'm in this really cool place and I can't have a drop of my own beer. We need to change that. How about the rest of the state? Nah, I don't like them.
We'll just make it happen. We'll just make it happen.
I just remember a buddy of mine got married down in Telluride, I believe 4 or 5 years ago, and I was able to drink Sweetwater Blue on draft that entire evening, and it was the happiest I've been in a long time. I've been striving to retain that feeling of happiness.
Chasing that dragon ever since.
Laird, were you already out here, or did you come from someplace else? Or
No, I'm a native all the way through. Me and, 12 other folks, we were brought over from the Red Truck team.
Oh, okay.
And so bring us in, and then at the same time add about 20 people as we, just over a month ago as we opened up the tap room.
Yeah, so they, handed over the keys, and they're like, hey, there's one more catch. These guys live here, and you inherit them
and
as
they're
well.
Yours now.
Yep. Well, and on top of that, we're doing still a little bit of contract brewing that was assigned over. And so with us being intimate with, who those partners, clients were, and the beers that we were producing out of here, all in the same vein, we're still helping out other people,
Awesome.
And keeping that in vein.
Very cool. Well, I know Sweetwater's been super, super busy in terms of acquisitions of your own. We are going to touch later on the big news that broke earlier today with Monster Energy Drink acquiring the Canarchy group, and so it all kind of wraps in together. But I do want to touch base. It was announced at the end of last year, December 21st, that Sweetwater would be acquiring Green Flash Brewing and Alpine Beer Company.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about this. It feels like everything's starting to coalesce for Sweetwater on this Western expansion.
Yeah, big, consolidation and, strong brands out there, with like West Coast being one of those OG beers, mm-hmm. that hasn't changed over time, but definitely has a cool, strong foothold out there. Alpine, Duet, Nelson, the OG Lemon Haze, just solid beers. I've got a couple of those upstairs, actually, we should grab after this.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And, as we make a move, kind of come back full circle, part of the move of Sweetwater purchasing and taking over this facility is it's a regional production plant. Why go ahead? We're going to launch California right around Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So statewide, tons of beer going out there right now. Green Flash and Alpine, on top of us taking, you know, some legacy brands and, you know, helping push those back into life and show them the energy that they deserve. It helps us to have, you know, synergies within sales, distribution, markets, networking, everything out there. So with that said, you know, all the production of Green Flash and Alpine is going to fall into this facility. We're currently recipe matching, working over altitude adjustments and water profile so that we can keep the continuity of those brands and, you know, let those things fly.
Also, so really cool to have a buddy to go out to the West Coast with. You're like, hey, this guy's been here for a long time. Yeah. We like each other. I'm pretty cool, too. You know, that makes, like, I think that just makes walking in the door to a party a little bit easier.
Oh, exactly.
What made you guys, so I didn't mean to cut you off, Tristan. Oh, no. That was on my mind. Like, why the move now, really? Because, I mean, when we, there was a land grab, it seemed, with people opening multiple facilities, what, 5 or 6 years ago, something along those lines, where West Coast breweries were trying to move east, East Coast breweries were trying to move west, and there's been some fallout from that for sure. Like, what made now kind of the right time?
You know, you never know until you go for it. Yeah. You never know until you go for it. And, you know, to that point, there's been a handful of companies that have made the move from west to east. Like, you know, Awesome Neighbors New Belgium right down the street. You know, Oscar Blue, Sierra, all these other folks.
Right.
Nobody has made the move east to west that I know of. And so, maybe, who knows?
Like, hey,
let's try it and let it rip, man.
It seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
Now, for Green Flash, very like-minded in the fact that both breweries, you know, had a very strong hop focus, in the early 2000s. Green Flash went through its own kind of maturation in they went through private equity owning. They saw a little bit of a decline. They were planning on opening up an East Coast location in Virginia. That didn't really pan out. Why Green Flash now? What do you all hope to do for that brand? A brand that, you know, very much for a long time had a really strong legacy. How do you inject new life into a brand like that?
You know, we put those, we've got awesome people on the Sweetwater team and our distributors, the folks that we work with, but kind of bringing them into our umbrella, and then the same thing with Alpine to take the ride with. That's exactly where we, you know, get back into volume economics, and you know, it's better for us to work together than, you know, in beer we're always competing with each other, never against each other. Mm-hmm. You know, but then to really bring those all these companies together, then we can bring it back to let it fly, because incredible brands, incredible beer, and that's what we want to see is. That's what we want to give people to drink, you know, the best of the best.
Yeah, they had their own strange legacy towards the end there, too, like you were saying, where they were trying to expand east, and then didn't they buy a facility in Nebraska or something like that?
They did, yeah. Good point.
Yeah, it was just like an odd kind of like, no, because everybody, it was during that same time where everybody was trying to open another location, and they were like, okay, these ones make sense. This checks out. And then they were like, wait a minute. Why are you going to Omaha?
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, there was, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense, and it wasn't too far after that that the brand kind of, it seemed like it,
it
that's
seemed like
it, lost
it fizzled
legs
a little bit, but, you know, like I said, you know.
Not the brand itself, but just, like, the operation.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But there is such a groundwork that has been laid, and I think there are a lot of loyal Green Flash drinkers out there, and I think this partnership, like you were talking about, gives it an opportunity to bring those people back around, correct?
Yeah, 100%. It's cool. It's cool because, I mean, I've got family out in northern San Diego. Every time I go out there, I'm drinking Green Flash, mm-hmm. you know, and finding some of the stuff that, you know, maybe you can't get out here or that I haven't seen around out in Colorado, but it's a brand that's got legacy. It's one of those OG brands that's been around the block, and if it can keep telling the story of, you know, the evolution of craft brewing, you know, where we started, and, you know, where we're getting to now, and who knows where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awesome to be part of
and
getting
think,
that beer back out
I
there.
I mean, honestly, I would think from the production side, it's probably fun for you guys, too, because Sweetwater has its own identity and the types of beers it likes to make, flavor profiles, things like that. So having an entirely different brand in-house that has different flavor profiles, different your strategy style, strategy on styles and things of that nature, it seems like it would just be more fun.
Yeah, 100%. Three brands now, you know, with Alpine included.
Right, right.
And yeah, that's a cool part of it because, you know, we're trying to, like I said, we're for the brewers, it's a sandbox. You know, we've got the 10 barrel system right behind us here, and that's a playground, you know, that goes into tap room only. But when we get on the 50 barrel system, that's where they really get to play, have fun, you know, work with creating different water profiles, you know, really tackling these things. I mean, we
made
do it,
that
we
sound
do
so sexy.
Thanks. But these guys do it for the challenge, you know, like. And we kind of have this chant, you know, that we say all the time, like what we used to say when we were mainly focused on contract was less brands, more volume, less brands, more volume. And now we've taken a different approach where, you know, we're going to be making tons of different brands out of here, but also at the same time, tons of volume. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's fun to just do something different, you know, every time.
Yeah. Now, you've got Green Flash, you've got Alpine. I want to talk a little bit about Breckenridge Distillery because it was announced that you all acquired Breckenridge Distillery as well. You've got a DIA location, which I want to
yep.
touch on also.
Yep.
But even with before all of that, you know, back in November of 2020, it was announced that Sweetwater itself was going to be acquired by Aphria, which then was acquired by Tilray, both of those cannabis companies.
Yep. Yep.
It makes sense. Sweetwater has long been friendly to the cannabis industry
yep.
in a lot of the names of the beers. I mean, just hops as a whole are you know, very closely related to the cannabis.
Cousin.
Yeah.
This exactly. 420 Pale Ale tastes pretty good right
yeah.
now. Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit about where that parent company comes into play in all of this, because obviously they're very strategic in wanting to grow their beverage brands as a whole. How did the relationship come about? Are you familiar with how the relationship first came about between Aphria and Sweetwater, and kind of where can we see this as, you know, the U.S. becomes more and more friendly to the idea of legalizing marijuana? Where does that play into the beverage space and how that all works together?
No, sure. It's, I mean, I think the whole look with the, you know, the merger from Aphria and into Tilray, taking on the Tilray name, it's creating a consumer packaged goods company.
Sure.
You know, not just streamlining yourself where the only thing you do is cannabis. Mm-hmm. You've got now the ability, with the anticipation that we're going to federally legalize THC here
sure.
at some point. You know, the camel got its nose under the rug a long time ago when Colorado lit it up. And then
my
you
stock
look at,
portfolio certainly hopes so.
Yeah, bro.
I thought when Biden got into office that we were going to see.
It was just going to be
yeah.
quick.
We were all
justice.
Just hoping.
Yeah.
Well,
Corey, just because you bought a bunch of weed doesn't mean your stock profile is full of marijuana.
Listen, it values over, the value increases over time. You know, it went down. It's a little stale right now. But these strands are going to be worth a lot in 10 years. And I think my grandkids are going to be grateful for it.
You know, but yeah, same thing in that. You know, when it comes to, it's not just a product at the end of the day. It's everything that goes beyond it, you know, distribution networks and sales contacts and synergies that we have. Who's to say that we don't throw a little cannabis in 420? You
sure.
know, someday down the line, once
sure.
we have the ability to, and TTB and everybody else is okay and allowed with it.
I think
thing.
Lagunitas said that they were fine with it even without TTB approval. So
yeah, they're like, hey, we're
I
just
mean, go right?
I'd rather ask for forgiveness and beg for permission.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I was gonna say that ship has already sailed. You guys are free to do whatever you want, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, I am a little offended that there's no joints on the table. You were very generous with the beer, but we don't have any weed on this table.
Just turn the camera off. We're good to go.
No, but in all seriousness, does this? You talk about this network. You talk about distribution. It all seems like it's all kind of, especially in the past year, everything is kind of aligning for this anticipation for legalization. And so I guess, you know, you talked about the possibility of infusing THC into the beer. From a distribution and whatnot, the network side, where does that all play into things?
Well, you know, I think kind of in the same vein where we've got, you know, Sweetwater is going aggressively trying to hit as many states as possible.
Sure.
We're turning on a substantial amount of the West Coast here over the next year. When we set those things up, you know, the aim and the hope is that we see those same channels be able to distribute not just a combination of perhaps beer and cannabis, but also cannabis following right through, you know, into those same channels,
sure.
going into retail stores, going into outlets. So that Tilray has an opportunity to
establish those relationships,
immediately green light and hit all 50 states.
That's one of the things that doesn't get talked about a ton is how easy it would be for the cannabis industry to kind of infuse itself into the distribution networks of
sure.
beer and liquor distributors as well.
Because
they've already got the facilities to do it, right? They've already got cold storage facilities. They already have distribution trucks and already have the network set up with suppliers all around the country and things of that nature. It does seamlessly kind of fit in as soon as it does become the kind of industry where you can start shipping across state lines and all that kind of jazz. So. I mean, it's set up for success.
Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of people out there with a lot of questions. We're touching on a lot of interesting topics right now. For those of you who are listening in live and maybe tuning into our live broadcast, be sure to leave us a comment in the comment section. If you have any questions for Laird or any of us, we'd love to hear from you, and then we can toss it over to Laird to.
I know Scott Weichert's requested that we drop some 420 to him when we come back to Denver.
Okay. Cool. Yeah,
that's one of our. Me with a good
now
time.
We're just mules.
That's right. Scott, one of our main editors on Porch Drinking, apparently wants some 420.
We got you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, very interesting. Now, tell us a little bit more. We touched on Breckenridge a little bit. Breckenridge Distillery, where do they play into all this?
You know, quite honestly, that one's so recent. Some of the Breck guys, the leadership team, are coming out here next week, I believe. So we're going to figure out where we're at with this.
I get the feeling that Sweetwater was like, hey, we're going to open up distribution in Colorado, and then we're just going to do everything Colorado does.
It kind of seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are going to manufacture skis in the next couple weeks, sure.
Why not?
I was going to say mountain bike skiing. Like, let's just check off just all the boxes.
Go for it all.
And also, there's a DIA location, too.
Yeah, DIA location. I've been there. When I flew to Atlanta, we made sure to book extra time just to go sit there and have a couple beers. Real cool spot, you know, right at the end of the B terminal where it kind of gets into that, you know, regional, whatever you call it, doors, you know, to jump on the planes.
Sure.
But yeah, great, cool spot, you know, good food, you know, great same beer selection.
Just in case you can't get a direct to Telluride, you have to stop at DIA.
Drink some Sweetwater there. And then you can have some Sweetwater in Telluride.
And then you can get it in Telluride.
So what does that mean? Are there plans to follow suit in California? Do you all foresee, you know, acquiring a distillery or acquiring a restaurant out there, opening up another taproom location out there for the Sweetwater brand?
You know, good question. That's not something that we have talked about yet that I'm aware of. Right now, you know, we take Green Flash and Alpine, and we make sure to carry those brands and give them continuity. And at the same time, we've recipe matched 420 and Hazy and a couple other beers in here, and then we will immediately take on all of the West Coast distribution out there. Yeah. Let's see what happens when we fill up this facility and when we start busting at the seams. You know, I think you saw our internal construction, the tanks that we have.
Out there,
12 tanks, 12 250 barrel fermenters out in the parking lot. When we get these things online, you know, the facility should be able to produce about 80,000 barrels. Mm-hmm. That's a good problem to have when we hit 81,000 barrels and we have some problems here. So at that point, I don't know.
Still a lot of
open up a spot in California at that point.
Yeah, well, now, bringing it back to the local side of things, you know, this physical brewery location has seen its fair share of change. Originally, the Fort Collins Brewery, and then Red Truck most recently. You're with the Red Truck team. Where do you feel Sweetwater can succeed where maybe Red Truck wasn't able to connect as closely?
You know, speaking on that side, Red Truck was phenomenal people. Red Truck was awesome. I think it was just maybe the wrong place, wrong time. COVID.
I mean, COVID
didn't help anybody.
Because the Red Truck brand was out of Canada, right? They had locations up in Canada. They wanted to open an American facility.
Yep. There was one location up in Vancouver. They always wanted to bring their brand into the U.S. This was a great opportunity for them to do so. And, they were open for about a year and a half. And, you've got those market penetration, you want to get deep, and then COVID hits. Things happen. So they're still doing great, alive and well up in Vancouver. You know, I still not hang out, but talk to some of those folks. And like I said, great, great folks and wish them nothing but the best. But on the different side, to answer your question, it's the same approach, be part of the community. We're 3 weeks old, We opened on December 17th. So I don't know, maybe we're a month old now, but you get out there, you be good people, you contribute to the community. We make sure to give back. We're brewing a beer here shortly called Regrowth and Restoration. That's actually with Peculiar. That's going back to the Marshall Fires, helping out some of the folks down here. So even though, immediately, within the first month, we're trying to, we're not trying, we're working and we're brewing and giving back.
So is part of that plan to do a lot of collabs with local breweries and then just get involved with community efforts? Because I know you guys are heavily involved with certain community initiatives and charity work in Georgia specifically, right?
Yep.
Are there any particular plans to kind of make that a mainstay here?
Oh, 100%. We need to find the people out here and do some working around to find the people that align with who we are and what we do, because the whole brand is about supporting the outdoors, you know, taking care of fishing, streams, ponds, rivers, all of this.
There's a 20-foot rainbow trout outside.
I know. That thing is awesome, man.
Yeah. these guys like fly fishing. I get it.
Dude. Finding synergies like that, and that's where we want to make sure that we can make the community a richer place, not just, you know, for the people that are, you know, our coworkers and in here, but also the community at large, and do the same kind of things, like incredible neighbors that we have right down the street. Huge impacts here over the last 30, you know, plus years.
Yeah.
And now, kind of in the same way, I can, Tim, who owns Horse and Dragon, you know, he said this one, so I can't steal it just from him. But, you know, we just want to add to the texture of the brewing community mm-hmm. up here. You've got so many different breweries, 25, 27, 23, whatever breweries there are in Fort Collins. Huge. And you've got a little bit of everything to offer. And, you know, we just slide in here, add to that.
It's a tough town to compete in, to be completely honest. It's pretty, you don't see a lot of towns that are like Fort Collins. The only example that I have is just from my own personal experience in Chico, where Sierra just runs the show there, basically, because every bar has 7 or 8 different Sierras on at all times. It's different here because you have 2 major breweries, Odell mm-hmm. and New Belgium, that they've been around for a long time. They're kind of stalwart brands, and they've built a lot of relationships in this community. So I think that a lot of those extra spaces get taken by the smaller breweries, right? Like the local crafts. Do you foresee there being like a lot of, maybe not problems, but making it a little bit of a difficult head row for you guys here in terms of getting draft lines, distribution, things of that nature, just because of like the size of the brewery matters a bit, you know? Like, you're not just some small mom and pop that's like coming in here and like opening like a small little facility. It's a major player. So like competing in that market seems like it would prove to be a little difficult.
You know, but you got to remember we're small for now.
A small, yeah, know? No, like, that, yeah.
We got a lot going on us. It's, you know, in February, Sweetwater celebrates 25 year anniversary. Mm-hmm. But to Fort Collins, we're small right now, you know? Like, we might have a big footprint in a big facility, but, you know, we're just getting off the ground and getting going. And I think the way that we touch the community, the way that we help each other out, the way that we work, and the people that we have, people above and beyond all else, that's going to speak for itself, you know, and how it goes. And I mean, so on and so, just so far, you know, same thing. I mean, Odell just helped us yesterday. I drove my truck over there and they put a whole pallet of raw materials in the bed of my truck mm-hmm. and, you know, helped us out when we were having trouble sourcing some raw materials. Same thing, you know, everybody has been super welcoming, you know, super helpful. It's kind of like I say, it's that rising tide, like I said, again, where we always compete with each other, not against each other. You know, we want to promote and see all the best for the community and the craft beer business as a whole.
Speaking on my, one of my favorite topics is live music. And I think of Sweetwater 420, I think of 420 Fest.
The lineup this year.
I want to know what.
Oh, like I'm free, yes. Snoop.
Oh, that's fun.
Anastasio.
It's all the good times. Yeah.
You name it.
When are we going to see a 420 Fest out here in Colorado?
Yeah, that's what I was actually, my question is, what dalliances, what you know, partnerships are you trying out here that, if anything, at the moment? But, you know, live music wise, there's also that part of the brand too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think as a phrase goes, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You one bite at a time. You know, and that's what we got here right now. So, 420 Fest here. This year, next year? No, not gonna happen. Yeah. But here's a cool thing: if you kind of turn around and look out this window,
you heard it here, 2024, 420 Fest. You heard it here first.
Yeah, quote me. So our entire parking lot here is going to turn into a beer garden. You know, west facing, you get to watch the sunset over the mountains. It'll be a huge, you know, turf trees, you know, everything that you name it. I'm sure, I'm positive, we're going to blow the hell out of this place when it comes into live music here. It's going to be a bit much if I tell you I can start a multi-day, you know, who knows how many thousand people.
It's obviously a space. It's a huge space. You want people to be here and hang out. It's not just a production facility. And that's a hard balance to toe because, Like, it, obviously, having a tap room, like, a lot of some breweries, they'll have, like, a smaller tap room because it's mainly a production facility. But this is both, right?
Yeah. So,
and it doesn't work unless both things are kind of clicking on all cylinders.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you know, live music, that's a huge part of who we are. I believe Larkin Poe just got signed for the 25th for the anniversary that's actually in Atlanta, alongside a couple other great bands. And to say that we aren't going to exercise that and, again, add to the community, give some folks an awesome time, a bunch of good beer to throw down while you're enjoying it, like 100%. I'm sure it's in our future somewhere, but right now you got to – you know, we gotta crawl before we walk.
You gotta walk before you can run.
And then we'll get to running here soon.
Yeah. Now, for those who haven't been out to the Fort Collins Tap Room, tell us a little bit about this experience. I know you all have the food component. What can people expect when visiting this brewery out here?
Yeah, I good question, man.
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
But I have a good time every time I show up. So.
Couldn't tell you.
No, we've got an awesome selection of beers. You know, it's a great blend between some beers that are brought in from Atlanta, and then a handful of beers that we've either recipe matched or that are just Colorado specific. Like I said, off of the 10 here. Yeah. Each of the brewers, we've got four brewers on the team right now. Each of them has one, if not two, beers that were just their own unique creations on tap right now. So you get to see, find something local. You know, right when you walk in the door, you see this giant blasted tie-dye container. That was done by a guy named Sam Ross, a local muralist here. Absolutely killed it. But that's a kitchen, you know. So the same thing. Our chef Jordan. We kind of took a little bit of inspiration from the Atlanta menu. A lot of inspiration from the Atlanta menu. Kind of get that Southern flair. We can't find how to make boiled peanuts. Apparently nobody sells that out here.
Those are not going to sell here. Those are not going to sell.
I haven't even had them before.
Not a fan. I need cheese curds.
We got cheese curds. We do have them.
You're one out of four right now. So
peanuts, come on. That's true.
You know, so boiled peanuts sounds pretty good.
But you know, Jordan put his whole spin onto the menu. So, you know, we've got a couple burgers, you know, a couple things like this. Really simple stuff. We don't get into it too extravagant, but if we're going to do it, we're going to do it really well. You know, and Jordan's the guy to do it. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's nice to hopefully see like more Southern hospitality kind of enthusiasm like in a place like Colorado, right? Because a lot of the people that are here, even in Fort Collins, everybody does. It's a Colorado brewery. It's a Colorado business. We do things the Colorado way. I'm very interested to see how y'all just like.
Look at him throwing in a little y'all in there.
Yeah.
We got Brian Kelly over here. Mm-hmm. Thinks he's Southern all of a sudden.
Yeah, I got a touch, just a little bit. Not from anybody in my family's side, but, you know, just whenever I hang out down there, I just inherit the inflection.
Well, yeah. It's on that side. That's what you got to say when you come in here. What do you expect? Say hi to Val. That's what you can expect. Val Miller is our taproom manager in here. She's from the South, you know, from Atlanta.
Nice.
You know, she's running the show in here and just absolutely killing it. You know, again, you know, it kind of falls back.
Because I think that's where the success would potentially, in my eyes, that's where the success lies a little bit. Just like staying true to yourself and not just completely bending to like, oh, we have to do things differently out here because it's a different state. Even though, like, because to me, there's not a lot of regions of the country that have their very own unique identity. Obviously, totally. The West does to a certain degree. California has its own certain style. But you don't really see a lot of breweries from the Southeast that are making headways like out West and in other markets, because I think a lot of times they do try to lean on the, well, we're a great Southern brewery, we got Southern charm, some of the hospitality, all that. But I do feel like if you're a larger player coming into town, you're like, no, this is who we are. Like, this is part of our ethos and our just culture in general.
Well,
I think that
makes it stand
out in a
play in the local.
Yeah.
You know, making adaptations, you know, making sure that wherever you go, you make it work where it works. Maybe people wouldn't like boiled peanuts out here. I don't know.
Well, that's
like
a complete lie.
I have no idea what
when
I'm
I worked
about.
At Harpoon, I don't like them. One of the things that always bothered me was that their tagline was like, we're the Boston brewery, right? That doesn't play in Georgia.
Sure.
Like, that just doesn't really. So how do you do that? I mean, this is a little more like brand talk, I guess. But how do you do that in a place where, like, hey, we're from the South, we're a little 420 friendly? Is that, like, the entire play is that it's 420 friendly? Like, how do you translate that going into a new market and making a name for yourself but still being true to who you are?
Well, you know, our tagline that we got right above the front door is don't float the mainstream. Right, I mean, right here. Yeah. You know, on the wall, don't float the mainstream. Is it the Chattanooga or is it the Pooter that we're talking about? Maybe it's the Pooter we're talking about, you know? I mean, and it's kind of think outside the box, act outside the box, you know? Go play and have some fun. And if we say we want to get outside, respect the outdoors, go hiking, go fishing, and have a beer in your hand, you know, maybe a spliff while you're at it, why not? How's that going to go wrong?
Yeah, not necessarily like a regional ideal, right? But just more of a mentality about the consumer that you're kind of going for and what you speak to as a brand.
Exactly, 100%.
Now, I want to shift over a little bit to the business side of things while still talking about the beverage, too. You all have a diversified portfolio. You've produced a hard seltzer. You've got a hard tea, if I'm correct.
Yep, Golden Isles.
Golden Isles. And also, I mean, the rise of ready-to-drink cocktails are huge. So tell us a little bit about kind of like where these different segments in the alcoholic beverage space that you all clearly followed the trend of growing these different segments. I think I saw in craft beer business, that the ready-to-drink cocktail segment grew by 60% in 2021.
And that's a I don't know those numbers exactly, percent, but I know that, you know, we like their diversification, you know, and we like to have a different offering because when it comes into that side, now we've got something that's gluten-free. We've got something that's, you know, vegan. We've got these different beers and things offer different, these different liquids offer different approaches. So, we've got four flavors of the Oasis, our hard seltzer. And then there's the varietal of Oasis lemonade. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, another four flavors over there. Golden Isles is, kind of that.
Have you all seen the similar success with your brands into the national trends that have been kind of like?
Good question. Blown up? Good question. You know, again, I'm all production.
At least locally. I know it's been new here, but
Riff is our vodka soda that we do, and currently we had some licensing changes here, and so you can probably likely find it out in the market elsewhere.
Sure.
But, you know, between those, it was a great seller here until we modified some licenses and, you know, we're not offering it here anymore. I love it. I drink the hell out of it.
Sure.
Well, that happens a lot with brewers, right? Like, it's usually the thing that the consumers like the least is what brewers like the most. How that turns out to be. I'm a huge fan of like the hard teas, like the hard green teas that are out in the market. Mm. I haven't tried yours yet, but I love just like the flavors of those.
Like Georgia sweet tea.
And honestly, peach. The perfect thing for if you are snowboarding or skiing or mountain biking or whatever, and you're having like a long day, if you're gonna have a beverage with you, having something with a little caffeine in it, really good. It really hits the spot.
On that note, I do want to switch over to the big news of this that broke this morning.
Monster.
Actually, Sweetwater will be buying Monster next week.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't know if you heard.
We're not supposed to talk about
on
that.
On the way up here, Red Bull acquired Sierra Nevada. So,
talk about an unlikely pairing. I think it's really interesting. It speaks to this idea of diversification of portfolios. We saw this with Topo Chico. We saw this with Four Loko was a pioneer in terms of like the energy drink entering the alcoholic beverage space. Now Pepsi and Coke are both vying for opportunities in hard beverages. And so with this, it really speaks to this growing trend of, well-established beverage producers that maybe previously didn't wade into alcohol who are now diving in headfirst. Mm-hmm. What did you make of the news? Obviously, it was huge when it was announced this morning that Monster would be acquiring, drawing a blank all of a sudden.
Canarchy.
Yes, Canarchy. My mind has been fried. Canarchy. Obviously, they're no strangers to acquisitions and mergers as well. Private equity came in very early on, and that's what kind of fused Oscar Blues and Cigar City and Perrin Brewing and all those together. Corey, what was your take on it when you first saw the news?
I feel so bad for the distributors and the distro reps that just inherited this at all the Monster distributors in the country, because they're like, hey, you like selling Monster, right? You're like, yeah, it's a big money maker for us. Like, cool, here's seven breweries and all of the SKUs they also carry that you have to sell now. That's like that's first of all a nightmare from somebody that used to be on the sales side. But then the other thing was, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about a few weeks ago. I'm like, what does craft even mean anymore, and does it matter?
Totally.
Like, to me, I'm so out of that mattering anymore. You know, it's about supporting companies that I like and that make good beer.
And
well, that's where my head went immediately. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, the news was big. I probably saw at least 10, 15 different publications sharing the same press release out there. And one of the main missions for Porch Shrinking is never to just regurgitate a press release. So my mind thought, like, what's the different angle? And so when it was announced that it was Monster, I was like, all right, well, you know, the scenario that we've always played out in our heads when it came to the Brewers Association's definition of craft beer was, what if Walmart came in and purchased a brewery?
Right.
You know, according to the Brewers Association's definition, as long as 24.9% of the breweries owned or less is owned by a alcoholic beverage producer, then it's still considered craft beer. And so, to me, I was like, well, what if a non-alcohol producer came in and purchased a brewery?
Everybody's head's just spinning at the BA today. They're like, ah.
We don't know what to say.
So that's what we did. We reached out to the Brewers Association. We're like, hey, the scenario has finally played out. You know, a corporate entity that is very much not by anyone's definition of independent has come in and 100% acquired a craft brewery. Is that still considered?
We'd hope this day would never come.
That's right. And sure enough, under the Brewers Association's definition, Canarchy is still considered a craft brewery.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a nutshell, what the BA has become less relevant in terms of where, like, in terms of what they provide to the community. Like, I know they lobby and stuff, but, like, here, what we saw with this, and we see every time they move the requirements to keep Sam Adams in the group, and every time, you know, what happened this year with Rat Magnet and, like, their lack of response to, like, addressing problems in the industry, that's where my head immediately goes. I'm like, what purpose? What is this? What's the purpose of this organization other than maybe talking to a lobbyist every once in a while after he got done talking to a cigarette guy that was at the Capitol as well, just trying to lobby for his things? Like, hey, we need a reduction on malt taxes.
Sure.
You know, like, is that the whole thing?
Well, I think you bring up a really good point. What is the purpose? What is the focus of the BA? And so I think obviously, you know, lobbying and working on opportunities from a legal standpoint for craft breweries to grow, that's something they've always been very strong at and something that they've focused a lot of 100%. Their attention on. Now the marketing side, I think, was extremely relevant in terms of trying to catalyze craft or beer drinkers against big beer when, you know, probably 7-8 years ago when it was a huge issue, when Goose Island was first acquired by Anheuser-Busch. Obviously, I think it was successful at the time, not so much now, because acquisitions and mergers, that's become very commonplace throughout craft beer.
I mean, we're sitting with somebody that's owned by Tilray right now.
Exactly.
So we could probably...
Yeah, it's all in the same band. I'm like, this is big news.
And so I think this is a moment where the BA needs to take a harder look at itself and say, all right, obviously, independence is not something that is as relevant to craft beer drinkers in 2021,
yep.
Nor should it be. And I think we should figure out a different way of saying, hey, let's all work at this together. Like, let's all team up at this together to grow, you know, whether it's like focusing on flavor and not just drinking, you know, watered down light beers, or maybe it's, hey, let's work on this together in terms of growing, just opening up craft beer to a more diverse audience.
I think that's kind of the play right there. I mean, the BA is 100% done a lot of fantastic things, and I mean, over the years, things change, just like styles. You know, you
sure.
have, you know, sometimes people are, years ago we were chasing, everybody was going for sours, and everybody would be barrel aged, you
yeah.
know, and then we went everybody at high octane. If you remember that GABF, you know, a couple of years ago, that every beer was a high alcohol percentage, and then yeah. the rubber band snapped and session was created. And then you have hazy. You know, I think the relevant of craft and independent and all these things, what's the buzzword? It can change over time.
Sure.
You know, and at the end of the day, is it a good beer? Is it a good beer, and is it made by good people who are doing good things?
Well, that's the second part. The second part's the more important part. That's really, to me, what it kind of comes down to in a lot of ways, because there's a lot of good products out there that I don't necessarily support the direction and the intentions of the parent company, right? It's ulterior motives or just very
detrimental environmental practices, people practices, things of that nature. Because you can, I mean, we see Facebook posts where, that are just littered with comments from people that are just like, I don't care as long as the beer is good, or as long as the beer doesn't change, or just keep politics out of beer. But ultimately, it's like, no, that, I don't know, that stuff does matter to me.
Sure.
Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm the one that is just like, hey, this is too, I think this is important, and I'm a dumbass. Maybe that's the case. But to where I think the acquisition part should ultimately matter is, what are the intentions behind the people that now are pulling the levers?
Sure.
And as long as those are still pretty pure, you still have to make capitalistic decisions, then I'm okay with it, mm-hmm. right? It's just a matter of what's the motivation behind the acquisition and how you treat the people that work there, how you treat the community, what you're doing with the products. That's ultimately what I care about.
Well, kind of in the same thing, like you said, you know, yeah, is it a salesman nightmare to have like all these SKUs dumped on you? But also, like some of those beers are great beers, you know? A lot of mm-hmm. the beers are great beers. And how cool is that for them to have this huge distribution, you know, side, you know, and extra weight behind them?
Sure.
You know, get beers by good people over there, you know, and just right back into more fridges.
Do you think with Monster, when I saw this, I was like, all right, so they're going to go the route of Four Loko and make like a malt beverage.
I know that's what everybody's jumping at, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, my mind immediately went to a bunch of Four Loko jokes that I could make, and it was the same hack thing that everybody else was doing on Facebook today. But I think it's just a beverage company with a distribution network.
Sure.
It's the same idea as a cannabis company buying a brewery that has a distribution.
Good point.
Network,
really
right?
Good point.
Like, I don't think they're looking. I'm sure it'll come up.
There's going to be product development. There's going to be something.
The same way that they're looking to potentially do cannabis infused beers and whiskeys and things like that. It's going to come up, but I don't think that's the product isn't the main motivator behind purchases like this. It's the distribution network.
What was the other news? Wasn't there some other news of Canarchy and something cannabis recently?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember Canarchy tied into cannabis. I'm not.
They changed the
sure.
name to Cabnarchy.
yeah.
All right, that was your dad joke for the day.
Well, for me, I mean, you look at every stadium that has that already serves Monster Energy drink. Like, why? Like you said, from a distribution standpoint, why doesn't that open the doors?
I'm actually pretty cool with Monster doing this because I'm a big action sports guy, snowboard, a mountain bike. They pump so much money into that industry and sponsor riders that are getting insane contracts that other sponsors aren't providing.
Well, that's the point that I made too in our article on porch drinking is that like Oscar Blues outdoor adventure, you know, mountain biking.
Reeb.
It aligns, Reeb. It aligns in that sense of you're reaching a similar demographic. It's not too far of a reach to cross over into the Monster realm, right? Mm-hmm. So
I agree. Yeah. How much does Tilray really influence any of the decisions that are happening here?
No, I mean, I'm sure there's some influence somewhere up there, but you know, like
I'm saying this candidly.
You know, we still do us from you know, I went down to Atlanta in with the acquisition happening in July. I think I was down in Atlanta in August, you know, ish or so. Talking to everybody down there that's been with the Sweetwater team for, you know, 10, 15 years, you know, longtime employees say nothing's changed. You know, it's zero. You know, obviously we have, you know, new targets and, you know, different looks at the financials and P&Ls and things like that.
You also have the
see.
Capital now to do what you want to do or would do what you need to do.
No, that's why we're sitting in this room talking right now, you know?
That helps a
yep,
bunch.
Yep.
Because I know that's kind of a tough position to be in. Not a tough position, but it's, you know, craft for, I think, a lot of us for a long time is it's been this artsy kind of, it's more of a philosophy kind of, industry.
It's kind of in spirit. It's how you
it's
act.
It's a spirit not kind of thing, right? But then you come down to the brass tacks of, hey, we've been acquired by such and such brewery. I have plenty of friends that work at breweries all over the country that have been acquired by others and such. And you hear ones that are not fun stories, right? I mean, I grew up in one of the towns that's like one of the, 12 Budweiser breweries in the country. And when the whole InBev acquisition happened, it was bad for the town. Like, it was not good.
Really?
And then I had other friends that work at craft breweries that have been acquired by larger entities, and they have said nothing but good things.
Sure.
So you've got this pounding on the door from people that are still craft is art. Craft is this fun little industry that we've created, and those guys suck. But the people that are on the inside that I know about, they're like, everything's pretty good. Like, our benefits got better. We're all making a little bit more money. Like, nothing's really changed. So it's not always this evil kind of corporation coming in and sure. destroying everything. And it sounds like that's a little bit so far of what's going on here.
I think that's it. 100% everything that, you know, like I said, the Atlanta folks have said and what I've experienced here, you know, working with Tilray is, are you good people making good beer? Do you have a beautiful space, and are you doing good things for the community?
Sure.
You know, that's what it is, and that's what we're doing here.
It's just unfortunate that Budweiser kind of came and, you know, tarnished a little bit of that spirit because, you know, for so long we kept hearing the company line of, oh, nothing's going to change. We're just going to come in and let people do what they do best and provide more resources. But the fact was, and for several breweries acquired by Budweiser, things did change. And so I wish that craft beer could have experienced more stories like the Tilray's and Sweetwater's and more of like the Curin and New Belgium that we're seeing.
Bells.
Yeah. I mean, like those are examples of opportunities like this that have worked.
Well, I think that's a benefit of seeing how it played out.
Sure.
To be completely honest.
Yeah. Hindsight.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's not as if all the Budweiser acquired breweries are experiencing that. I have friends that work at a few of them, and I know there was obviously like at the facility in my hometown, it was rough. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't far after that Goose Island happened, right? And we heard that was rough.
Sure.
But then if like Devil's Backbone, 10 Barrel, I just haven't heard that.
Yeah.
Like I just haven't. You
totally.
Know, from my friends that like worked there.
Well,
and then obviously
just like anything, maybe you got to take a second, dial it in, you know?
Yeah,
like your first one, a little rough. Yeah. You know? Maybe second one, third one, then you get better and better.
Acquisitions, like they've had the benefit of learning how this plays out from somebody that did it before them.
Well, I think another example to point to that happened recently was it was announced that Molson Coors had divested St. Archer as their craft beer, as one of their craft beer brands in their portfolio, and that Kings and Convicts, the same random small Illinois brewery that decided to purchase Ballast Point, would be buying St. Archer from.
Still my favorite IPA, Kings and Convicts.
Yeah, exactly. Kings and Convicts Sculpin. I mean,
yeah,
it's a classic.
It. Oh, gosh. I love their grapefruit, watermelon, lemon, strawberry
yeah.
IPA. It's so good.
But so, I mean, I haven't had a chance to connect with anyone on the Molson Coors team, but it sounds like if they're divesting Kings and Convicts, it sounds like they're shutting down their craft beer branch as a whole. So where does that leave, you know, your friends down the road at Terrapin, right? Like they're also currently owned by Molson Coors. What becomes of them? What becomes of Hop Valley? You know, where does that go from here? And also, is this something where it's a one-off situation, or do you see, you know, is big beer finally seeing the writing on the wall of the volatility of craft beer with, you know, these trends of these spike trends of hard seltzers and ready to drink cocktails? Like, is there just so much unknown still of what's happening in the marketplace that craft beer is now something that maybe the people at the big beer brands are like, we can't afford to risk, you know, having to adjust to these trends?
It's a good question, man. I mean, I wish we could. Who knows what's coming next?
Yeah.
You know, you think and you put all this time and energy and man hours into trying to figure out what's coming next. And you know what? 17 years that I've done this, like I said, you know, every trend and everything that's happened, we always thought that we could stand in front of it, predict it, and then all of a sudden Hazy IPA comes out, and you're like, what the hell is this? You know, and then
what's
all of a sudden
this beer
over,
that tastes the same
like,
no store. Matter where you
and then,
go?
And then next, you're like, what the hell is White Claw? You know, like,
sure.
it comes out of nowhere. But then all of a sudden it's all over the place. And now we're doing it,
yeah.
You know? So to know that, I mean, my side on here is, I guess, kind of like what you said about the beers that we like to drink as industry employees. Every time the rubber band snaps, where do we come back to? Like lagers and IPAs. Lagers and IPAs, you know, those are the backbone. We can experiment, we can play, and sometimes, you know, you get out there and you do something crazy and you find a dog that can hunt and you let it go and everybody starts, you know, training their dog the same way and you find a new variety that comes out.
Yeah. Larry, how long have you been a brewer?
Oh, I'm not a brewer.
Oh, you're on the production side.
Well, yeah, I do all operations.
Oh, you know, do all operations.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, scheduling and you know.
So I guess where I was trying to get at was, so somebody that's on more, like, the production side, you know what the brew schedules are and things of that nature. What has Sweetwater already released its big bets for this year? And
yeah.
And what are those?
I'll follow up back with you. I don't know if they're public. I've seen the internal decks on everything. And so, like, I know what's coming up.
I wasn't sure if stuff started hitting distro yet.
Yeah, we've got some really cool, new offerings for the seasonal and the variety packs, you know, that the computer stacked on
now. It's a great case.
We've got some really cool stuff that's going to be out there. Out of our facility, we focus on, you know, the heavy hitters and the opening portfolios for new territories. Mm-hmm. Whereas Atlanta, we'll be doing some more product development, but then I'm sure we'll take our turn over there.
What's like the big three? Like, if you were going into a new market and you're like, hey, we need three in the door, what are those?
Oh, 420, Hazy, Highlight.
Cool.
Yeah, those are our big ones.
Yeah, all right. And then I guess where I was trying to go really was, somebody that's been working in the beer industry for a long time, all of us are terrible weathermen. We don't know what's coming tomorrow, right?
True story.
What do you think
blizzard.
Yeah. What do you think?
I hope we need the water.
Like a trend in like a year or two. Like, where do you think it's kind of going in terms of styles, in terms of category?
I think
having fun with it.
I think we're coming back to. I think the culture is now and the culture is now evolved, and I think we're at a point where we have. Such an educated consumer. Mm-hmm. You know, a long time ago, it used to be people were sitting down. You just wanted to be part of the counterculture. You know, you could sit on a bale of hay, like in the back of an industrial park, and drink whatever it was, you know, in early 2000. Now, everybody's put so much time and effort, and they've seen who we are as an industry and how we impact the community back. I think, like, the perfection of chasing, like, that perfect lager, you know, again, that porch pounder.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, what's going to come back
porch
to
drinker.
Limelight. Yeah, the porch drinker. See?
I see what you did there.
You like that pun?
Yeah. And I'm out.
Call it a day.
Available at Molly's Spirits.
Yes.
Well, speaking of, Larry.
Speaking of Molly's Spirits, a world of beverage choices.
No, I do want to say a big thank you for joining us on the show tonight. It was really great getting to hear of all the incredible things that you guys are working on, and we're very eagerly awaiting 420 Fest 2024. We're very excited to have you guys up here, and obviously you've been a long time local, but excited to see your involvement in helping to usher in this incredible brand that we're all big fans of.
Yeah, 100%. Appreciate you guys for making the trek up here.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
love it.
Hospitality is appreciated.
Once again, if you have enjoyed what you've been listening to, be sure to subscribe to the Porchcast on all of your listening devices, whether it's Apple Play, iTunes, whatever it is, Stitcher. Give us a like, and if you like what you're listening to, give us a little rating as well. Also, a big thank you once again to Molly Spirits. You can go pick up your Sweetwater 420 packs out there. On Tap Credit Union, if you're looking for some financing for home loans, auto loans, or trying to expand your brewery, be sure to check out our friends at On Tap Credit Union. And on January 22nd, be sure to join us out at the Winter Brew Fest. Big thank you to them, and we're excited to go try a bunch of tasty beers from over 30 breweries and 80 different kinds of beverages. Winter Brew Fest. This has been episode 89 of the Porchcast. Big thank you to Corey, Bryant, myself. We've enjoyed joining you once again, and we'll check you later.